Welcome to the latest edition of the Trinity Tims as we try to make something of the close season. So it's a month since the last league match, 3 or 4 weeks since the Scottish Cup final, and our first pre-season game will be July the 4th away to Queen's Park, followed up by a trip to Cork. So my name's Joe McHugh, I'm hosting tonight, and as usual, or as ever, I'm joined by Eric Knott and James Forrest. So we've all got our own independent Celtic websites. And before we go too far, I'd like to give a shout out to those Celtic websites and Celtic podcasts that resisted the call last week to go up to Celtic Park and try and bang the drum for the Celtic and Newcastle friendly. I think it's a match that most Celtic supporters and most Celtic online outlets are agreed on. It's a waste of time. It's a pointless match. And it's a little bit cheeky. It's a bit naughty expecting season ticket holders to stick another £25 in that. So to all those guys that resisted, congratulations. To those that went along last week to speak to Stephen McManus and Shea Given, why? 50 weeks of the year, Celtic don't want to know you. They have no interest in you whatsoever. They'd prefer to speak to their friends at the Daily Record, The Sun, The Daily Mail, Scotsman, Herald, STV, Radio Clyde, etc., etc. But this one's a bit tricky, so this is when they pull in the fans. So when you get that phone call or a text message from Sharon or from Jambo Jameson, ask yourself, why do they want to contact me? Is it because I'm a good guy? Is it they want to contact my audience? Or are they simply using you and they want you to sell tickets? And if you get a chance to speak to Stephen McManus, I like Stephen McManus a lot. He was a great Celtic player. Took him to 21 and a half years old to make his debut. He was never the golden boy, but he came through and he captained the side. And he captained the side in two Champions League last 16 ties under Gordon Strachan. Brilliant performance, but in charge of the Celtic B team, what's the point? I mean, we're going into the fifth season of that. The well has run dry. We had three players make four token substitute appearances last season from the Lowland League. What's the point? But that's me off my high horse. We'll turn on to more traditional matters. There's been a flurry of Celtic transfer activity, perhaps. There's been a lot of wingers linked to the club. There's also a Japanese defender. But it's variable. We did definitely... Kieran Tierney is certainly a Celt. He signed up for a 5-year contract. That was good news through the week. It was hardly news. It was an announcement and some impressive social media work. Let's hope the social media team are very busy over the coming weeks. But there's been a few wingers linked. Ben Negen, if that's how you pronounce it, or Ben Nygren, playing in Denmark, recently turned into a Swedish internationalist. He seems fairly close to joining the club. There's a couple of wingers being linked, and unfortunately, there's players being linked with moves away from Celtic, probably led by Nicholas Coon. So I'll start off with a message from the south coast of Ireland. I'll head over to Eric. What's your take on the transfer activity, so to speak?
Well, there's a lot of talk so far, but you know, nothing has been confirmed as yet. Obviously, we have Kieran Tierney in the door, and that's great. That's all confirmed. That guy from Fulham, Callum, what's his surname again?
Osmond,
yeah. He still hasn't officially signed, even though he's been apparently seen putting messages up on Instagram and so on and so forth. So that's looking likely to happen. Again, we discussed that last week, so we kind of came to the conclusion that he's going to be a project player because he... with the level he's at, he's probably not going to be first team ready. Benjamin Nygren, he looks decent enough. The fact that he's made it into the, you know, the Swedish national team means that there's a bit of potential there. Looks like he's a player of a decent caliber. He's playing at a, I suppose, the Danish league would be a similar level to ours. So he's probably playing at a similar, if not maybe better level in terms of the kind of opposition they play week in, week out there. So, if you know, there by all accounts, the reports are saying this guy has a lot of potential. So I think I wrote an article on it yesterday, and I think there could be a possibility that he might be a direct replacement for Nicholas Kuhn, because I think it's looking more and more inevitable that we're going to let Kuhn go. I think we discussed that last week, and I think that he's the player, you know, that big outgoing sale that we'll have this summer. 15 million that's an insult for a player who delivered what he did last season. I mean, talk 20 million, maybe then we'll talk. I think that was what I said in my article. But he's a right-sided winger, Nygren. He can play on the left side, which Kuhn can as well. So it looks like he could be being lined up to be a direct replacement for Kuhn. And I think the board is probably already sort of, you know, lining themselves up to look at bids for Kuhn. From Nicholas Kuhn's perspective, I guess it would be nice for him to go back to the Bundesliga. He's a guy who tried it really, you know, he worked really hard at trying to break into the Bayern Munich side, couldn't do that. He couldn't break into the Red Bull Leipzig side, and then he went off, you know, was it Ajax he went to as well? And then, you know, he moved around a bit, tried to break into teams and couldn't, and then did it in Austria before we bought him. And I mean, look, we paid 3 million for the guy. It was three and a half million. So I think if we can get 20 million back at him, that's a great piece of business. Nicholas Kuhn strikes me as the kind of player who he's there. If he was to play in the Bundesliga, I think he could turn it on week in, week out. I think what happened to him in our domestic league is that when the pressure was off, he's just, I don't know if he has the interest. So that's why I might not be too bothered to see him go. But this, moving on from him, this Japanese defender, don't really know a whole pile about him. He's a centre back, 23 years of age. It's Albirex Niigata he's playing for, isn't it? So not a whole pile out there. Not like there's I looked at his profile on Transfermarkt. He's young, looks decent. We're going back to the Japanese market. Are we going back to what we went to? Are we going down to the well that Ange went to again? I don't know, but it looks. I'd be wary of that one. The Nygren one, I would see as a replacement for Nicholas Kuhn, and then I would say there's not much else. What other is there? Is there rumors about other wingers there? Is Balakwisha or any of those? Anything? Nothing coming to fruition. Yeah,
but he's getting a mention, and also some guy playing in Norway that we're linked with in January. He's getting mentioned, but Inamura is not young. He's young in football terms. He's got less than 30 first team appearances to his name, but he's 23 years old, and 23 years old, no international caps. They rested their first team effectively for the recent World Cup qualifiers. Inamura still wasn't in there, so we are diving very deep into the Japanese market, and it looks an awful lot more like Yuki Kobayashi than it does Kyogo Furuhashi.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
So I really don't see the purpose of that one. But James, what's your thoughts on it? All around me online, and the misfortune to listen to Radio Clyde last night, there seems to be Celtic supporters utterly obsessed with the balance sheet. They seem to think it's a fantastic achievement, getting £15 million for Nicholas Kuhn when we spent £3.5 million for him. With Jota being out, with a question mark over Hatate, I would think that Nicholas Kuhn is the last player that Celtic should be selling before Champions League qualifiers. As it stands, if he's sold, we're looking at Yang, Forrest and Maeda as three wingers and absolutely nothing else. Anyone thinking that Marco Tellio's got a role to play at Celtic's tuned to the moon? So, folk going on about the profits. See, for £15 million, I would happily let any club anywhere in the world or a consortium of clubs take away all seven of Mark Lowell's summer 2023 signings. That would be great business. That would be fantastic. They're all on five-year contracts. They started 13 SPFL Premiership matches last season. They cost about £20 million. The Jota fee was thrown out the window on that lot. So where do you stand, James, on the talk of transfers so far? Is it I know you had a piece during the week and saying, don't be obsessed by the £12 million. Beating the Tory Andrew Flo price tag means nothing. No. But we need to get a certain level of quality. We should be consolidating. We shouldn't be looking to sell the team off. And going into the Champions League qualifiers with untried wingers, that's Russian roulette to me. That's a risk too far. But I don't think it particularly matters to the Celtic board if they're in the Champions League or the Europa League. It's just a different category of marketing for it. But what's your take on the rumours, hints? I mean, most of the stories have come from foreign sources. What's your take on the activity so far, and what priorities would you like to see happening over the next 2 weeks before the players get back for training?
Well, we're busy. That's looks certain anyway. I'm just not convinced that a lot of it is improving us in any way, shape or form. I mean, as I say, I'm not going to be on a downer about the kid we've signed for Fulham. Not going to be on a downer about that. He's 19. I don't think he's being signed even remotely as a first team player. He's going to have to prove that he's got something before any of us will buy that. Nagerin looks like a good player, like a really good player. He spent some time in the Dutch league as well as where he's playing right now. So he's got some pedigree and he's in the Swiss national team. He is a perfect signing. And his price range and his age range is an excellent signing. I'm really happy with that signing. As a replacement for Kuhn, he simply will not do it, I'm afraid. He is being signed as a squad player, hopefully, not as a replacement for the guy who lit up some of the Champions League games last season. You can't just do that. Rodgers will want a proper quality replacement for Kuhn if Kuhn goes. But see, Joe, you referenced the Gavin Berry piece, right? I'm not obsessed by next bend. I'm not obsessed by us breaking some ancient transfer record, which was a fool's ploy in the first place. As I said, we got John Hartson and Chris Sutton for the price they paid for Tory Andrew Flo, and everybody knows who got the better deal. Everybody knows who got the better deal. And that whole fiver for a tenner period was utter folly. But the Scottish transfer record was set way back in the early 2000s. It will fall at some stage and we will be the ones who will break it. I found it absurd that for a long time our transfer record sat stuck on 6 million. And it was, to me, it was like proof that football had passed us by, that we were sticking to that kind of for some, when even buying a moderately good player was going to set you back way in excess of that. So I'm pleased that we broke our record subsequently, but I don't see there's any need to break it this summer, because there are still good 4, 5, 6 million pound players out there. And I would rather we went and fixed a few problem positions than spend that money in any one area. But Gavin Berry's piece was mad for several reasons. He said we would break our own, he thinks we'll break our own transfer record twice. So that's spending 24 million on two players. You could build half a freaking decent team for that. If you know what you're doing and you're shopping in the right markets. So I think that's madness. But it was the whole context of the piece. We would sign 4 or 5, maybe even 6 players before then going and spending that kind of money. Where is he getting that from? So what, we're going to go out and sell and sign 8 players this summer and spend in excess of God knows what? To do what? We're not rebuilding the team here. We're tweaking the areas here and there. We're adding cover and competition in areas where we currently don't have any. It's mad to even talk in those terms. But one of the things he said, which was equally bizarre, was that Celtic had largely cleared the deadwood out of the squad. You've just said it yourself, mate, right? If someone offered us 15 million for the job lot of the Mark Lowell signings, we would take it. Not one of them has off the wage bill yet. Not one of them has got a permanent move. We're going to be stuck with all those guys. They're all going to be back at pre-season training the way it's going right now. There was some suggestion on one of the sites today that we're going to have a second look at Marco Tilio. Why bother? Why bother? We can all see what Marco Tilio is doing in Australia. That's his level. Leave him there. Let him go back there. The idea that we're going to get anything out of Kwon is mad. The idea that we're going to get anything out of Thiago Holm is mental. Those guys go wherever they want to go. And Naroki and Lagerbelka There are a lot of fans who don't understand why the manager doesn't like them. And it's very simple. They don't fit into the manager's style of play. So you can keep those guys around if you like, but the manager won't play them. If you keep them around in the hope that the next manager, if Rodgers goes into the season, does want to play them, then, I mean, we're treading water. What are we doing? What are we doing? Well, what is that? What kind of strategy is that? All these guys need to be cleared out. All of them need to go. And we need to get as many of them off the wage bill in this summer as we possibly can before we go nuts and start signing 6, 7, 8 players, if that indeed is the plan. Right? Again, it's almost as if some of your guys don't grasp the reality of UEFA financial sustainability regulations any more than some of the ones across society. We cannot have a wage bill that still has all these guys on it and then sign 6 more. That will not work. That's crazy. So some of the deadwood has got to go first. The guy from Japan troubles me immensely. It's as if we've not learned anything from going to the second tier of Korea to get Kwon. I mean, that's a player to sign and develop and play him in the first team, if he ever makes the first team, 3 or 4 or 5 years from now. I don't know why anybody thinks that's a first team signing. That's not even close to being a first team signing. The second tier of Japanese football, please.
No. He's not a second tier. His team's involved towards the bottom of the top division. Does it change it too much? Well, it's the bottom of the Japanese division or the Korean second division. It's not Champions League level players. If Kieran Tierney gets injured, we need somebody to come in. And a guy that's played, a 23-year-old that's played 30 games so far in Japan, is not that guy. So does that mean it's Liam Scales going up to left back?
My only question for that would be, right, is he any worse an option than Naroki? Is he any worse an option than Lagerbelka? Is he any worse an option than Stephen Welsh, who we're apparently trying to find a buyer for? He certainly is not any, as far as I can tell, is certainly not going to be any significant kind of improvement on Liam Scales. So are we signing a squad player or is this a development player? Because that means that 2 or 3 of the guys that were linked away and who look like we'll get deals for are development players. They're not first team players. They can go and satisfy whatever criteria certain people at the club need to check off in the Reeboks. But that doesn't do us any good in Champions League qualifiers that are coming up. We don't need 6, 7, 8 players. We need 4 or 5 of the right level, of the right quality, to augment the current squad and they provide good cover in certain positions. If good players go, they need to be replaced by similarly good players. It's very simple stuff. And Celtic gets it wrong nearly every year.
Yeah, I mean, just a comment there, Joe, as well. I mean, that it's the early signs are like worrying me in that it's almost as if we're starting to look at the kind of level of players that we did to when Brendan came back 2 seasons ago, you know, with Asman and now with this Japanese kid. They're not players that are going to augment the squad or make us Champions League ready. Joe's dead right there. And I mean, I also said in my article about Nicholas Kuhn, I mean, yes, if we were talking 20 million plus, it's worth accepting it if that was going to be invested back into the squad. Right, but there's no point in accepting 15 million is an absolute waste of time because it's not going to benefit us. We're going to lose a player who was Champions League caliber, who has turned the style on in the Champions League games that he played in last season. So we're going to lose him, and that's why I'm saying, is this the kind of mentality that we're dealing with? That the board is the board thinking that Nygren is an ample replacement for him? And James has pretty much confirmed what I was saying. We don't know. Is he? You know. That's the worry here. Are they going to start going down the cheapskate route again to try and make us ready for a Champions League qualifier and, in other words, make us totally underprepared for it? Are we just going to buy in a raft of projects? You know, because let's call it as it is. James has said it there, and I'm kind of reiterating it. These players that have been mentioned so far, yes, we've been busy. We're being proactive instead of reactive. But they're not exactly setting the world alight, what we're talking about. Yes, other than Nygren. Nygren looks promising. The other two, I don't know. I really don't know what the thought process is behind that and how it's going to benefit us in any way, shape, or form going into a Champions League qualifier.
Yep. Well, in terms of bringing in development players, we don't have any process or any means to develop players. Matthew Anderson's just finished his second season. It's basically been sort of half seasons. I think he's played about 20 games each season in the Austrian second division. And I suspect that that's to prepare him for life outside Celtic. I don't think Matthew Anderson's coming back to challenge or provide cover at left back for Celtic. So if we're behind a development player, they might be going to this Queen's Park project. And on that one, I think we're very close to signing Isaac English from Morton. Good luck to the boy, 17-year-old. He's doing better than our 17-year-olds at our academy, clearly. And if he's going to Queen's Park and being challenging in and around the squad in the Championship, that's fantastic. And on that, I did a piece last night at the AGM in November. I asked Michael Nicholson about what lessons can be learned from Montrose and Morton. And he gave his usual sort of blank look. Can somebody help me here? So in 2023, Morton knocked Celtic out of the SFA Youth Cup at the second round. 2024, Montrose in 23, Morton in 2024. On Isaac English, I checked out, Morton won the second tier of the under-18 league. In the top tier, the elite tier of the under-18 league, Celtic played 28 matches and they lost 15 of them. So it wasn't just to Morton that they lost in the Youth Cup. And when I put that question at the AGM, Nicholson batted it away. Brendan Rodgers jumped in and reminded us that when he was at Chelsea, they lost an FA Youth Cup tie to Colchester. But apparently some of those players went on and made a career of it. Yep, it can happen as a one-off, but our under-18s lost 15 matches to Scottish opponents. They didn't finish in the top six of the league. In the top six, there was Kilmarnock, Queen's Park and St Mirren. So they're all scouting in the west of Scotland. And this stuff about it's not about winning, it's developing players.
Well,
I've spoken to Celtic youth coach down the years, and there's a little bit of truth in that. But if you're at Celtic and you're not beating Queen's Park, Kilmarnock, St Mirren, Motherwell, teams like that, then there's very little prospect that you're going to make it at Celtic. So it's another of those areas where the club has got lots of work to do, and unfortunately doesn't seem to be much sign of that. So you get anything else to add, James, on the transfer front?
No, but I'll talk about the Stephen McManus front for a second, right? In any culture where there was any sort of accountability at all, someone would lose their job for that performance. For losing that many games with your resources, someone would lose their job.
Wait. McManus is with the B team. That's in the Lowland League. I'm not sure who's involved with the under-18s.
You see every level, but every level.
Yeah.
Every development level. And McManus's comment about how success shouldn't be judged by how much you win. My first thought when I heard that was Ibrox fans will be glad to hear it. Because that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about crumbs of comfort, that's all. And it's of no comfort whatsoever. Because we're not succeeding in any level. The under-18s, as you said, is a mess. The B team is a mess and can't win the Lowland League. And we have senior people with responsibility for development, first-team players, so we don't have to break the club transfer record every year, telling us that winning isn't everything. And they're still not developing players. If that was the line and two or three players looked capable of breaking into the first-team squad, then it would be some comfort. But none do.
That statement is a total contradiction of itself.
Is there such a thing as failure? How do we measure failure? How do we measure? On which basis are we judging this then? If it's not about winning things and apparently developing players into the first team and getting them to play sustained numbers of games in the first team, apparently doesn't matter either, because no one's lost their job for that. And how long has it been? And what you said, right, about us signing a 17-year-old, right, from Morton, I'm aghast at that, right? As you say, well and good for the guy. Hope he comes in, and I hope he's good, right? But I don't have any faith in McManus or anybody else in our academy to be able to spot a player when they have one in front of them, because they didn't do it with Kieran Tierney and they didn't do it with Callum McGregor. That was Ronnie Dyler who did it and couldn't believe that they'd been overlooked. And the same people are still working there right now. That they should have got sacked for that alone. It blows my mind. It really does. Sorry.
Eric?
Yeah, no, all I was saying was that statement about, you know, it's not about winning, it's about developing players. It's a complete contradiction of itself, because they're not developing anyone. So what is it about then? It's about losing and not developing anyone. That's the reality, because we're not seeing anything else other than that. You know, as you said there, in the under-18 league, 15 games lost. I mean, that's, for a club of our size and stature, that's just, that's shameful.
That was 15 out of 28 matches lost. I mean, that's horrendous.
Yeah.
And so the four young players that featured last season, Francis Turley came on, I think, the 89th minute against St Mirren early in the season. Jude Bonner came on the 80th minute in the 5-1 home win, or 5-0, 5-1, I think it was. Yep, Schmeichel lost a goal late on, was quite angry against Aberdeen. And then Sean McArdle got a couple of minutes in two games. None of those guys are ready for the first team. They must go out on loan to championship teams next season, get proper football. And if we get one out of three coming back to Celtic in a year's time as a first team player, we'll be very fortunate. That would be a lot of progress compared to previous seasons. So I think we've looked at that fairly in depth. So we're going to turn to something quite topical and interesting to all three of us, and that's artificial intelligence. So some people might not believe it, but all three of us are fairly independent. We're human, we've got pulses, and we actually type. Yep. So we type and put out stories, and folk looking in here are clearly web savvy. And they might have noticed recently there's quite a lot of guff appearing in Celtic websites, and sometimes a lot of guff at the same time. So, incredibly, when Ange Postecoglou got sacked by Spurs, some websites were able to churn out 3, 4, and 5 stories within an hour, all reacting to that. That's really prolific, but it's more than prolific. It's a little bit naughty, but each their own. None of us benefit from the BBC TV license. We all live or die by our own means, by the revenue generated one way or another. But increasingly, there's a lot of flannel on these stories. There's some brief bit of interest, some token nugget in there, but these stories are getting padded out and padded out by so much nonsense and things that you know and you've read about 100 times, not 100, plenty of times. So both James and Eric have flagged it up recently. So Eric, what's your take on the proliferation of AI? And I'm not too against it, because I reckon folk can see through it. It might take them quite a few visits to realise this site's taken me for a ride, that this site's a lot of nonsense. Whereas, for good or bad, you get some original content in each of our three sites. So what's your take on AI and the Celtic web sphere, if there's such a thing?
Well, I suppose the thing for me, I touched on it in the article that I wrote there, I think it was the week before last. And I said, what bothers me more about it than anything else is it's the duping of readers into reading something that isn't going to tell them anything more than they already know about the subject on hand. And there's two websites in particular. I'm not going to name names because we're not here to name names about websites, but there are two websites in particular that use headlines to draw you in. And if you look, say, on CNN and Celtic News Now, in the first paragraph, you'll see the first few lines of any article that goes up. And if you or I or James put up an article, you can see from the first few lines what our article is about straight away and what player it might be about. Whereas these two particular websites will not tell you until at least the third or fourth paragraph what player they're actually talking about. And that really gets on my wick. It's so annoying because, like, I don't, like, these websites use the likes of Football Insider as a source. But I look at it every now and then out of just sheer morbid curiosity to see what the hell they're doing. They're also staffed by guys who apparently love Real Madrid, Barcelona, Manchester United, Chelsea, Celtic. So, like, these guys claim themselves to be Celtic websites, yet in their bio, they claim that they look after or they write about four and five other clubs. And you can see instantaneously when you read this stuff, they might create the headline, but the rest is AI. You can see that it's AI because the way that it's churned out. A few keywords will be taken, and then AI. And these guys are thrown out anywhere between 8 and 10 articles a day. And that's, to me, stealing wage. There's no other way of putting it. You know, you're cheating readers out of quality content. And it's something that we just, because of the level of effort and work that we put into our stuff, I abhor it anyway, and I'm sure you guys do as well. But it's becoming more and more prevalent. And there's that case in point there, Joe, that you brought up about the sacking of Ange Postecoglou, the way five articles appeared in the space of an hour. There is no way, unless you have a team of writers, that you can churn out five articles in that space of time. It's that simple. And that, again, that's just, you're moving away from the actual quality of what, you know, you're moving away from blogging in that regard. And all you're trying to do is make a quick buck out of cheating people by getting an artificial intelligence to write your article for you, to churn it out as quick as you can, to get the clicks as quick as you can. So what I'm saying, I guess, to savvy readers out there, just spot it. You'll spot it fairly quickly. You'll be able to see, as I said in the article I wrote, the cream will always rise to the top. You'll be able to see who the quality writers are and who the bullshitters are. And what's happening at the moment is the bullshitters are getting greedy. That's the reality, and that's why they're doing what they're doing. They're saying, oh yeah, here's a story now. We can churn out five in that space of time. And that, to me, is stealing a wage, and it's cheating the customer base, and it's cheating guys like us who put a lot of effort into the stuff that we do. We research it, we sit down, we take the time to put out good content, and these guys don't take any time. They just use a piece of artificial intelligence to do it, whether that be ChatGPT or any of those platforms that you can do it. It's a piece of piss. Anybody could do it. It's child's play if you really want to. So I'm just telling people to be savvy. That's it. You know, I mean, to be on the lookout for this kind of stuff, because if we look at the blogosphere compared to what it was, the blogosphere, the Celtic blogosphere especially, compared to what it was 10 years ago. I remember when I started following it 10 years ago, it was just quality. It was all quality writers. Guys who were churning out really good stories and really good quality. And now it's becoming less and less, and you know, there's the three of us are becoming a minority in the blogosphere, because other ones are like, I mean, there are quality. The Celtic Star, I'll say, it's a decent site, and Hail 67 can be decent at times, but sometimes turns out a lot of regurgitated stuff. Yeah, it does depend on the writer, and we know who we're talking about. So yeah, look, that's my take on it. I'm just saying to readers to be savvy, you know, and know, spot the bullshit when they can, you know.
I agree with much of that. I'm not as emotional about it. I think folk can see through things. I mean, you look at certain websites, and I don't know how many clicks, how many times it takes you to be let down before you start to say, I'm not looking at that, or I'll maybe look at it once a week to see what nonsense they're up to. So that's my take on it. I think this time of year is worth for it, because there's so little genuine content. There's barely two, three, a push, four Celtic stories a day. So any site that can knock out 10 stories a day, and some of the contrived stories, I mean, some transfer deal involving somebody in Germany or Spain, and how this apparently is some knock-on impact on Celtic. Yeah. I mean, yeah. that stuff's bonkers. But I think James has got a few things to say. So
there is some element of thought that goes into that. You know what I mean? To come up with something as contrived as that requires some element of logic, which ChatGPT still hasn't quite mastered. But yeah, I mean, much of it is terrible. I'm going to make a confession. I love ChatGPT. My ChatGPT is programmed beautifully now. Beautifully. I use it for editing, right? Because I developed a shoulder injury last year, and I've got a bit of a, I don't know what it is. It's a repetitive stress injury. It's really painful, right? So I try to limit how much I type these days, right? Unless I really, really need to, I won't use a keyboard. And so I use a microphone and I use Microsoft Word and a really good speech-to-text program, right? But I don't know if you've ever seen the Burniston sketch about the voice-activated elevator and how voice-activated technology doesn't do Scottish accents. It's brilliant. Right?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Right? And it's 100% true. Alexa barely understands us, right? Speech-to-text is a freaking nightmare, right? An absolute nightmare. So what I'll do is I'll narrate my piece onto the Word document, and then I will put it through ChatGPT to clean it up, to put it into some kind of form that represents what I was actually trying to say. But you have to program it very specifically to do certain things. Like, for example, return the piece with UK spelling. Return the piece without significant loss of word count. And the thing I have to hammer over and over again, and I still have to reprogram it every few months, do not substantially rewrite this. Do not substitute what I'm trying to say for what you think I should say. Do not do it, right? And you have to force it almost to listen to you, right? By repeating it over and over again, and sometimes when it churns out stuff that's substantially needed and you have to tell it, no, give me what I gave you. Give me back what I gave you, but tidy it up. That's what I'm asking you to do. And for what it does, it is excellent. Once you get it programmed just so, it is excellent, right? And it's very good for exchanging ideas. Very good for exchanging ideas. Because I'm getting back at fiction writing and I've been bouncing a lot of ideas off it like recently, and it's very good at responding to you like a person, right? Really, I would recommend everybody tries it to do that. It's great for like planning a holiday. It's great for like, you know, finding wee bits of random information. But here's the thing, and here's why it's extraordinarily dangerous. If you don't know what it does and what it doesn't do, what it can do and what you shouldn't do with it, right? You cannot ask it to write for you because it's hopeless. It's hopeless. It makes up facts. It gets other facts wildly, spectacularly wrong. It has a knowledge cutoff point, right? Whereby if you don't specifically tell it to look for up-to-date information, it will give you information that is way out of date, or it will just make something up. I've even had that come back with stuff that it's completely invented, right? And even made up links to go and find the information, which don't even exist. It's incredibly frustrating, right? And it's terrible at writing. It's terrible at writing. So the other day,
you can see that in the sites that use it that
way. Yeah, right. It's terrible, right? So the other day, I got on a little conversation. I read an article in The Guardian about how AI is being used to cheat on college campuses, and more college campuses are finding out that their students are basically downloading all their stuff. And I couldn't work out how the universities were doing this. They're using some kind of software. So I flat out asked ChatGPT, explain this software thing to me. What exactly are the universities doing, using? What does the software look for? And it came back almost word perfect on the kind of stuff that Eric is talking about. That is what it looks for. It looks for pattern behavior, right? It looks for writing that is, some people will say it looks for writing that is too close to perfect, right? I don't think so, but this is what the universities are looking for. Stuff that is too close to perfect. Structurally correct, grammatically correct, short sentences, not really very detailed information. I mean, the marker like human writing is that we sometimes go off in tangents, like I'm doing right now, it seems, right? Or writing in longer sentences and being expressive and stuff, and it doesn't do any of that. It can't do any of that. It doesn't know how to do any of that. And so this university software looks for certain markers. And I remember when I told our friend Simon, right, that I was using ChatGPT for editing, he said, for God's sake, don't do anything, they'll get us flagged by Google. And I wondered again what he meant by that. And now I know what he means by that, because Google uses the same systems to find this stuff. All of these sites are going to get banned from Google eventually, because it's so obvious what is produced by the machine. It's so obvious when you know what you're looking for. And apparently the algorithm does know what it's looking for. And it's exactly what you said, Eric, right? But, I mean, Joe, the example you gave is a beauty. The Ange one, right? Ange got sacked. Within, like, 10 minutes, there was a former Celtic manager sacked. And then the same website had John Hartson response to Celtic manager getting sacked. And then it was Chris Sutton response to Celtic manager getting sacked. And within minutes of that, there was a fourth article, and it was Celtic legends respond to Ange Postecoglou getting sacked. I was like, you've got to take your hat off to them. They're good. Well, however they programmed it, it's working well because it's doing what it's for the full day.
Before they say that,
it's horrendous. It's horrible to read. It's absolutely horrible to read.
Yeah.
There's no information in it. There's no passion in it. There's no life in any of it.
Yeah. and before this site did it, when they started doing it, they were only turning out 200 and 300 word articles anyway.
Yeah.
So there but wasn't a whole pile of effort going into it. You know?
Right. It's dead easy to spot it, right? And I'm sort of trying to educate myself about various aspects of AI, right? Because I do love using it, right? For certain tasks and certain purposes. I really have enjoyed ChatGPT since I've started using it. But I only use it for certain things because it's only good at certain things. It's not good at writing. It's not ever going to replace real writers. I cannot. I've read a lot of scare stuff about it, like in places like The Guardian and stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, that's not my experience in using it at all. Whenever it substitutes something I've been trying to say for something it's trying to say, I hate it. It's like, what the hell is that? Get rid of that. I never asked you for that. Get rid of that. And so it feels very flat to read it. It doesn't look like there's a lot. It's not very good at doing nuance. It has no sense of humor, although it's getting better at that. It cannot write funny to, you know, if it's metaphorical, artificial life depended on it, it could not write funny. But it is very useful, but people keep, you know, some of my critics keep on saying to me, it won't be long before you're out of a job. AI is going to put you and all the rest of you, all the rest of us out of business, right? No, it won't. No, it won't. If you've made your living, however, as a cut and paste expert, if you've made your living trawling other sites and rewriting their work, then you are very much in danger of being put out of business because it can do that better than you will ever be able to do it. So these sites have got a very short shelf life. I don't think they're going to last long.
Yep. I suspect Google and advertisers.
I've been learning a lot about it.
I think Google and advertisers are going to sort them out. Customers and readers are going to sort them out. So it will be a continuing problem. But I think they can reinvent themselves and pop up here, there, and everywhere. But I don't think you'll get any medium term future. You had a few points in that, Eric, you were trying to get in on?
I agree with what James is saying in terms of you can use AI. I mean, I use it in the SEO engine on mine just to put out a headline or the SEO title. And it does that. What it will do is it'll pull the keywords out of the article that I've written and it will just generate a headline, 5-word headline and that. And that's what goes in as the SEO description of it. And that's literally all I do. I've never used ChatGPT. I don't know how to. I don't know. I'm just calling me old school. Whatever you want. I just like typing. Always have, always will.
Yeah,
so, and that's not going to change. Unless, like James, an injury puts me in a position where I can't, I'll have to look at other avenues. And I know speech to text, I've tried that, is a fucking disaster. It's so hard to get it right, especially when we've accents like we do, you know? So, I had a speech to text. I got software, I got a dictaphone one time when I was writing books, because I've written a couple of books, you know? And I tried it, and oh my God, I spent more time trying to edit it.
Yeah.
After than I actually did it, I would have been quicker typing it. You know?
And it's really, really good at it. It's really, yeah. Really good at it. It even understands garbled Glaswegian.
Yeah.
Good at it.
Like I said, I think we're all right and we're all in agreement that eventually Google will clamp down on this and they will see it for what it is. And as I said, cream will always race to the top in the end. That's pretty much it, you know?
We'll draw a line under AI at that point. I think we might return to it in future editions. So for everyone looking in, we've got a good number of people watching us live. If you could add a comment at the end of the podcast, it won't be up immediately, but it should be up in YouTube in an hour or so. If you could return and pass comment, mainly positive, but if you get anything negative, we'll not be too sensitive about it. If you're not a subscriber, please click on subscribe, and importantly, click on the bell, which will give you a notification when we're live. So most of the shows seem to be going live now, but you can also catch them up on YouTube. So please give us a thumbs up. Please share, pass it around, whatever way you can. All those things impress YouTube, impress Google, and it pushes you higher up the chain. So that's sort of housekeeping covered. But I'm realising that that's 45 minutes we've been in, and we haven't mentioned the revolution. All those bears that have been looking in, waiting for some information, waiting to copy down different pieces, snatch clips from it, and show all their pals how demented we are. Well, that's 45 minutes without mentioning Russell Martin, Lyle Cameron, Davide Ancelotti, etc., etc. So, James, I'll give it a little bit of introduction, then I'll pass to you for the first blast at it. So, pre-season training starts next Monday at Murray Park. 19th of February, Keith Jackson, the Daily Record, told us that the 49 Jers were about to come into town. There was multi-million pound investment. There's going to be a transfer market splurge. But 6 days to pre-season training, and all they've got is to the guy that Phil Clement signed from Dundee, and they couldn't afford to pay him at the time. So they're waiting on the SFA setting a fee, which might be 6, 7, 8, 9 months away. So there seems to be a strange phenomenon going on where from Luka Modric to Harry Darling. Well done, Harry. Harry seems to have joined Norwich rather than the Revolution. So there's a bit of a downplaying on expectations. I suspect that there's not going to be too much of the war chest, the transfer kitty, etc., getting spent. I think it's a nice situation just now where Cyril Dessers is sitting in a hammock in Athens. He's got a deal agreed with AEK Athens, and him and his agent says, just wait on it, lads. Watch the fee disappear. Watch it go down and down and down. Watch me get a payoff, and Robin Proper's got that deal also with FC20. So he's been on loan for a year. No, he signed for a 2-year contract. He's getting big money. He's going back to FC20. And as we saw last year, 5 top first team stars were sold for £810,000. And then he brought in guys like Proper and Nedim Bajrami. So they've already committed to £4.5 million for Oscar Cortez. Are you surprised by the lack of transfer activity, James? There's nobody coming in, and absolutely no surprise, there's no interest in the serial losers, even though the race for Nico Raskin's apparently get every club in Europe involved. So a little bit for your friends over on that message board, James. Bring them up to date. Let them know how damaged you are by them laughing at you, etc., etc. And I've got to stress this. We are not warning them. We are not saying, be careful, lads. I'm saying, straight ahead, go for it. The revolution is underway. We heard it with Mickey Beale. We heard it with Phil Clement. We heard it with Giovanni Van Bronckhorst. Watch out, Celtic. You know who's coming, and we know the outcome. So I suspect Russell Martin's a 50-50 shout to survive till Christmas. I don't think he'll be the first manager to survive a full season. Van Bronckhorst never managed a full season. Beale never managed a full season. Clement never. So I'll pass the microphone over to you, James. Give them that update they've all been waiting on over on that message board.
Well, I mean, this week, and the absence of like genuine transfer news, there's been a couple of stories. I'll get to them, right? But in the absence of that, there's been a lot of talk about the new systems that are getting brought to the club, right, and this and that, right? And we've just finished talking about AI, so let me go back to it for 2 seconds, right? Anybody who wants to can go and use ChatGPT free, right? You get an enhanced service if you sign up, but you don't need to pay for it. You just need to register with it and have, like, your own profile on it. Then you can pay for an advanced version of it, right? But don't worry about that, and don't even worry about signing up. Go and use the basic free version and ask it. Tell it that you've just been appointed Ibrox manager. You've got £20 million to spend, and ask it to give you a starting 11 that you could buy right now for £20 million and see what it comes up with, right? And I guarantee you that it will come up with something just as good, if not better, than whatever system they're using. Because the press talks about this all the time, like it's proprietary technology, like there's some secret, hidden, underlying thing that leads are doing that nobody else in the world is doing. And it's crap. All these clubs are using the same system and the same basic data set. It's the same one you or I can access on ChatGPT right now. It amazes me, all this talk, right, about these, as if it's secret knowledge that these guys have got. It really isn't. It really isn't. It's all based on Optostats and all this other stuff and stuff that's readily available in the public domain. So if you want to spend their £20 million, you can ask ChatGPT how to spend it, and it will spend it just as well as, if not better, than whatever they're doing or the other. There was a story last night that I wrote about earlier with Barry Fry. In fact, I just put it up at 7 o'clock. Barry Fry got asked by the Daily Record if Celtic were interested, if Celtic had made any kind of bid or approach for... I'm not going to get...
Poker,
right, exactly right. Astonishing question he asked Barry Fry, right? The only reason it was asked is because the Ibrox club are now apparently in the driving seat to sign him, and there's 25 different clubs interested in him and all that, right? And one of them is not us. And what do you know? We happen to be looking for a right-sided midfielder who's got good scoring and good assist stats. And this guy's available for nothing. And instead, we're going away and paying £2 million for a guy, right? Well, that makes no sense whatsoever, does it? No sense whatsoever. So we must have been in the market for this guy somewhere. They asked Barry Fry. Barry Fry was like, nah. Didn't even get a call from Brendan asking about him. End of the story, right? But they tried to get a story out of it. They tried to get, he snubbed Celtic, or whatever it was they were trying to do. Right, so they may or may not get him. I think if he's got 25 different clubs interested in him, either some of the offers will be better than what they can put together, or they're just offering him a stupid amount of money. That might very well be the case. Who's the guy? Aarons.
Who was Max Aarons?
Max Aarons. Yeah.
What a fantastic article the Daily Record put forward today. Oh, it was an utter disaster in Spain, but it wasn't his fault. Well, whose fucking fault was it? Whose fault was it? He was the guy who owned the pitch. I think they conceded 12 goals in his first two games. And then, surprisingly, he hardly appeared for the rest of the season. Yeah. Well, holy hell. Why do you think that was? Surprisingly.
But he did scare Vinny Jr.
So, I mean, this is the kind of coverage that they read every day. This is the kind of garbage they're expected to swallow, right? They're expected to be excited about that. And you know what I mean? It's the whole thing surrounding that club is barmy to me. But there isn't very much happening except that they're trying to sell before they can buy. That was blatantly obvious that we're going to do that. This £20 million is a figment of the media's imagination. We're not going to have anywhere near that. And here's I shouldn't be telling secrets, right? But at the end of the day, the mob across the city are thick anyway, and most of them wouldn't get it if you painted it on the side of their house in letters 100 feet high, right? So I don't mind divulging the occasional secret. I sometimes think that what we do here is information warfare. Now, that might sound ridiculous, but it really isn't. I was schooled in some of the political dark arts, and this is one of the things that you do. And I wanted to go and be when I went to uni to study media, I wanted to be a trade union activist and work in their media department, doing rapid rebuttal of whatever lies were getting told about the trade union on any particular day, or, you know what I mean, if you wanted to comment on a government policy that was going to affect your members. The kind of stuff that I do right now, only as a Celtic fan. Like, so I kind of ended up in the field I was aiming for, but not quite in the way I intended. But a lot of the political tricks that I sometimes use in my work is that I think about this as information warfare. And so some of what you're right has got to be exaggerated. Some of it is exaggerated, right? And when it comes to their club, I exaggerate in ways that maybe only quite clear. I like presenting facts, right? Nothing better than presenting facts that destroy their arguments, right? But there are times when you need to be a bit sly about how you do things and undermine certain elements of the club, even when those things are working reasonably well. And I don't think that we've done a better job on the Celtic sides in recent years than we've done on Cyril Dessers, because I will not miss Cyril Dessers if he goes for £4 million. I will not miss him. I'll be glad not to have to face him again. I'll be glad if clubs in Scotland don't have to face him in an Ibrox jersey. I'll be glad if he's not playing for them in a Champions League qualifying campaign. Happy to see him go, right? And the number that we've helped them do it on themselves is incredible to me, right? There was already doubt about him, and all we did was amplified it and amplified it and amplified it. Diddy Dessers and slagged them stupid, right? A guy with a scoring record like that, I would have took him in our team. I would have happily took him in our team. No. I'm talking about the scoring record overall, right? That scoring record puts points on the board. It wins games. It almost got them a result at Old Trafford, right? So I would not knock it, right? I will not be sad to see him go. I will not be sad to see him go. And £4 million, they will find it very hard to replace a guy with that scoring record for that kind of money. And he won't even get all that money to spend.
Try £2 million.
Well, I'll be in that region. They'll certainly not replace him for that. Cyril Dessers has been a successful signing for them. No matter what way you want to dress it up, he's done what he was brought there to do. He's scored goals. And some of them have been
51 goals. Yeah.
Some of them have been big goals. Yeah, exactly right. In a very short space of time.
He's not scored a meaningful goal against Celtic. He scored in a dead rubber. And then at the end of last season, Celtic were 2-0 up. He headed a goal back, and then John Lundstrom decided to try and amputate Alistair Johnson's leg. So that's the two goals he scored against Celtic.
I would sooner not wait until he does score a meaningful goal against us. I would rather he was just gone.
I reckon you're in for a long wait, but he's their main man going into the Champions League qualifier. They're playing, I think, 22nd, 23rd of July. If he's gone...
The draw's
tomorrow. The game's about 5 weeks away. If he's gone, they're going to have to bring in a new striker, cross their fingers with Igamani, or hope that Danilo can throw away his crutches and do a turn for them. So I'll pass over for Eric from the view from afar on the pantomime at Ibrox. Just to repeat, there is no warnings to the Rangers supporters, no warnings to anyone at Ibrox, anyone that thinks they're a Rangers fan. Craig White was a great guy. I read it in the Daily Record. You all applauded him down Edmondson Drive when the day after he threw a pound into David Murray's hands. Charles Green saved the club. He bought the trophies. He bought the history. Dave King is not a glib and shameless liar. And there's good times ahead for Bears. Over to you, Eric. What's your take on things?
Well, my take is very similar to your guys' take. I did a couple of articles recently on the whole subject, and I mean, I was talking yesterday, I think it was, about Hamza Yaman and the fact that, you know, the whole of the Premier League is after him and the whole of the French League is after him as well. And I mean, it's just hilarious reading all the stuff in the media and the bigging up of players. And it's, you know, what James said there about Kwame Poku, you know, the desperation to actually get a tidbit from Peter Fry to say that we actually might have been interested in the guy, to say that we lost the battle to sign him. You know, it's pathetic. So I mean, I said yesterday that they were assets, the Americans are going to asset strip any asset out of that team that can make money for them, and they've started with Dessers, and they've started with Dessers because he scored 51 goals, so that makes him an asset, and that makes him, you know, of some value to them. And even as you said, Joe, if they make 2 million quid on him, that's a still hell of a lot more than the 810 grand they made out of how many players, was it five last season? Yeah, so I mean, that's a big jump up from 810 grand for five players as opposed to 2 million for one, you know. So they're doing well there. But I mean, I was reading Keith Jackson's article today in the Record about and this guy only a couple of weeks ago said that, you know, after Russell Martin was signed, that Russell Martin wouldn't get time or patience from the Ibrox fans. And it's literally then today he's begging the Ibrox fans to give him time or patience. And I kind of posited the question, have the Americans been onto him? and set the narrative and said to him, you need to ask for time and patience for this guy because we're going to give it to him. And the fans need to be, you know, mentally prepared for that. And the whole thrust of the article, like, is that it's all about giving him a chance, giving him time, you know? So, but I said today, and I was trying to look for a metaphor as to describe the Ibrox side and their pursuit of us and their constant pursuit of us and this mentality that they have that all that matters is catching us. And I think the best one I was able to come up with was Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. We're the Roadrunner, they're Wile E. Coyote. And to be fair to Wile E. Coyote, I mean, you got to admire the guy's tenacity. I mean, the shit he puts himself through to try and catch the Roadrunner, but he never does. And that's just the Ibrox side. They put themselves through absolute shit to try and catch us. And they can't. I mean, as I said, Wile E. Coyote slams himself into slim faces. Yeah, Acme FC. I think that would be brilliant going forward. But, like, I mean, it's the only good metaphor that I could think of, that we're the Roadrunner and they're Wile E. Coyote. You know, so, I said in the article, I think this time next year we're going to be having the same conversation about Russell Martin. We're probably going to be saying, look, God loves a tryer. He did try, but patience wasn't there. And, you know, what was it Keith Jackson said? They had a flaccid and something along the lines of a flaccid and pathetic season last season. So I told them to be prepared for more anyway. So that's my view on it. Things are going to be pretty, pretty flaccid again next season. I can't imagine that they're going to. I mean, they're being set up to fail anyway by the Americans. I can see that already.
Jackson's using a word like that. I don't want to see his internet search history. That's all.
I know, yeah. But it's a pantomime over there. And it's, Jackson said it's rinse and repeat. And he's right. It's looking like it's all rinse and repeat. As we said, they're 5 weeks away from a Champions League qualifier. Lyle Cameron is the biggest signing that they can announce. They're about to sell Cyril Dessers. The media are trying to flog Hamza Egemani. They're desperately trying to flog Raskin. I mean, they only really have four assets, and that's Egemani, Dessers, Raskin.
Diomande,
yeah, that's it. But I would not be surprised by the end of this season if you see those four players sold off and not a whole pile of that reinvested back into the squad. More a case of that money being reinvested back into to try and, you know, balance the books for the Americans or to bring back some of what they've put into the club. Because as we've all said, these guys are not there to fire money at the club for the love of the club because they have no affiliation with the club. They have no love for the club. It's a business acquisition for them. And one final point I make on that subject is the Record were very quick to say last week that the 49ers were only a minor shareholder. So if they're only a minor shareholder, how are they calling the shots?
There is a good reason for that. I suspect it's got a lot to do with what's happening at Crystal Palace right now. You know, the dishonesty about that subject is almost off the charts. Almost off the charts. This is one of the areas where ChatGPT is actually very handy. I wanted to get a feel for what UEFA's criteria is and how UEFA judges undue influence. And having a guy on the board at two separate clubs is definitely undue influence. Definitely. 100% undue influence. And I listened to Ian Maxwell. I heard him hand wave it the other day, right? And he's kidding himself on. He basically went there and bullshitted about that. He told a barefaced lie. UEFA will consider that undue influence. Of course they will. They can't consider it any other way, right? Now, what's happening with Palace and Lyon is interesting because Texeter owns both of them. And they're both qualified for the same competition. As it stands right now, Palace won't be in the Europa League. And their fans are raging about it, and they're really pissed off. And Texas has tried various legal manoeuvres to try and get around it. And UEFA have said, no interested in any of that. We want a clean break, separate it, or forget it. And the reason Palace fans are worried is because the way it works is that the club that has the highest league position goes through, and the other club doesn't. So for the foreseeable future, that looks like I'll be the club from Ibrox who are the beneficiaries, right? And the reason you know that Maxwell is full of shit, apart from the fact that it's in the rule book in clear and simple language, the reason you know that he's full of shit is that Leeds fans are concerned about it, and they are really concerned about it, right? We know a bunch of Leeds bloggers, right? And I've had a look at what they're saying about it. And there are elements of this takeover that they do not like and they are not comfortable with. And that is a big red flag for them. They don't know what their chairman is doing, sitting on the board as vice chairman at Ibrox, because they know that's a conflict and they know they'll be the club that gets screwed if that goes the wrong way. And they're worried about it, and they should be worried about it. For Ian Maxwell to stand there and say, oh, this won't affect anything. Might not affect anything in La La Land here, but Leeds fans are worried, and they're ready to be worried. It's mad. It's crazy. The dishonesty about all of this is mind-blowing to me, really. And it's dishonesty, because I don't believe that these people don't know that what they're saying is blatantly untrue. Of course they know.
Right. I think that Leeds are more likely to finish fourth bottom than fourth top next season. Yeah, and if they finish fourth bottom, I think they'll be celebrating. But that's enough hilarity for this week. We restricted it to about 15 minutes talk about the other lot. So we'll be back again next week where we'll be talking about Celtic signings. Michael Nicholson will be out parading the new signings. Paul Tisdale will be justifying himself, and we'll be all fired up and ready for pre-season training, Queen's Park, Cork City and the rest of it. So that's all from us for this week. Back again next week. Please subscribe. Please click on the bell. Like and add comments, preferably positive. Eric's got something to say. On you go, Eric.
Just on Lemical Lasers, whatever the kind of name that is, he's saying that we really must start being realistic. Laughing at them is one thing, but you're clearly burying your heads in the sand. I mean, wow. we're not burying our heads in the sand. We've looked at this from every angle.
Eric, your Roadrunner analogy is sublimely good for one other reason. Whenever the coyote flies off the edge of the cliff, it can only stay suspended in the air as long as he doesn't look down. And Ibrox fans have been being encouraged, don't look down for a long, long time now. And that is how they go about their day-to-day lives, mate.
Right, that's enough. Right. Time up, final whistle, goodbye.
See you later, Joe. Good luck.